This is BOA News, reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. As U.S. President Joe Biden convened the virtual climate summit of world leaders Thursday, he made an ambitious commitment to cut U.S. carbon emissions by at least 50% by 2030. And the hope is that other countries will also go further before the November United Nations Climate Change Conference in Glasgow. Some leaders of the European Union, Japan, and Canada announced new targets, as well as Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro. But the world's largest CO2 emitter did not make a new pledge. China's rapid development means achieving carbon neutrality in such a short time frame will be a challenge, according to President Xi Jinping. India, the world's third largest emitter, and Russia, the fourth largest, also made no new commitments. The U.S. Senate on Thursday overwhelmingly passed new legislation aimed at bolstering efforts to combat rising anti-Asian hate crimes here in the U.S. during the COVID-19 pandemic. The bill would establish a new Justice Department position to expedite the review of COVID-19 related hate crimes and provide support for local law enforcement agencies to respond to anti-Asian hate violence. The bill now heads to the House of Representatives, where it is expected to pass with wide bipartisan support. President Joe Biden is expected to sign it into law when it reaches his desk. Foreign leaders arrived in Chad for Friday's funeral of slain President Idriss Deby, despite warnings from the rebels that foreign leaders should not attend the service for security reasons. A military council spokesperson, a military council led by his son, took power after his father's death. He was killed battling and was killed in a battle with rebels on Monday. This is BOA News. SpaceX is set to launch its third crew to the International Space Station early Friday, reusing a rocket and crew capsule in a human mission for the first time. The crew mission is set to blast off from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida after being delayed a day by adverse weather along the flight path. It's the third time SpaceX will send humans to the International Space Station as part of its multi-billion-dollar contract with NASA under the Commercial Crew Program. The first mission, a test flight called Demo 2, took place last year and ended 9 years of American reliance on Russian rockets for rides to the space station following the end of the Space Shuttle program. Two Indonesian Navy ships left port in East Java Friday to join an urgent search for a submarine that disappeared 2 days ago and has less than a day's supply of oxygen left for its 53-member crew. The Navy said it believes the submarine sank to at least 2,000 feet, much deeper than its collapse depth, estimated at around 656 feet. Neighboring countries rushed their rescue ships to support the complex operation. The submarine was participating in a training exercise Wednesday when it missed its scheduled reporting call. Officials reported an oil slick and the smell of diesel fuel near the starting position of its last dive north of the resort island of Bali, though there has been no conclusive evidence that they are linked to the submarine. Canada is banning passenger flights from India and Pakistan for 30 days because of COVID-19 increases in the region. Canada's transport minister announced the ban hours after India reported 314,000 new infections in the previous 24 hours, a global record. Canada's health minister said half of the people testing positive for coronavirus after arriving by air came from India. Cargo flights from India and Pakistan will continue, though. Three of the seven Catholic clergy who were kidnapped in Haiti early this month have been released, according to a church spokesman speaking to the agency France Press on Thursday. As the island nation grapples with a rise in violence and ongoing political crisis, at least a total of 10 people, rather, were abducted northeast of the capital, Port-au-Prince, in mid-April, including seven clergy, five of them Haitians, as well as two French citizens, a priest and a nun. The kidnappings for ransom have surged in recent months in Port-au-Prince and other provinces, reflecting the growing influence of armed gangs in the Caribbean nation. I'm Michael Brown, reporting by remote, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, April 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The funeral of Chadian President Idris Deby takes place today, Friday.
The president of Nigeria is already here. Cameroon will not come, but he will send someone to represent him. The president of Congo, the president of Sudan, and there is still coming. Even Macron is supposed to be here.
Chad's opposition demands a civilian-led transitional government. The U.S. calls for peaceful democratic transition in Chad. We'll take a critical look at the European Union's strategy for addressing the crisis in the Sahel. And a search is underway for university students abducted from Nigeria's Kaduna State.
We believe that one of the reasons why the crimes have continued is because of lack of accountability. Impunity always leads to further commission of crimes by perpetrators.
And African children are missing out on life-saving vaccines due to COVID-19. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Chadian President Idris Deby will be laid to rest today, Friday, in the capital, N'Djamena. Deby seized power in 1990 and has ruled Chad for more than 30 years. The military said on Tuesday this week that Deby died from injuries he sustained on the battlefront against rebels. He had been an ally of the West in the fight against Islamist militants in the Sahel. Inojatel Arno is in the Chadian capital, N'Djamena. He says several African leaders are expected to attend today's funeral.
First of all, the president ceremony is about to start early in the morning at the nation place. People have made some place for the visitors. They brought some chairs and some musical materials. Most of the Chadian leaders promised to attend to this ceremony. They have said that they are not enemies, but they are against the way the president gave his candidature for the recent election. But they will attend to this ceremony.
A number of presidents or other dignitaries are expected to attend the funeral today. Who are some of the leaders that you know will attend the funeral today?
The African president who are already came to attend to this ceremony are, I think the president of Nigeria is already here. Cameroon will not come, but he will send someone to represent him. The president of Congo, the president of Sudan, and they are still coming, so they were waiting for them to come, and then we will see. Even Macron is supposed to be here.
What is the mood in Chad about the death of their president, Idris Deby?
The Chadian mood of organizing the funeral ceremony of the president remained the same. Since they bring the corpse at Nation Place, after the government ceremony, they will give the opportunity to the imam of the mosque to start their ceremony. After the imam, it comes the pastor. After the pastor, the public will give their impression on the rule of the president. After it, they will take the corpse to his village, Amderas, for the burning ceremony.
That was Inojatel Arno in the Chadian capital, N'Djamena. The opposition Transformers Party of Chad is calling for a national dialogue for a holistic approach to the formation of a civilian-led transitional government that will organize a free and transparent election. The Transformers Party rejects the suspension of the constitution by the military council following the death of former President Idris Deby, as well as the appointment of his son, General Mohamed Idris Deby Idno, as president. Dr. Undolembai Njesa Sada Sade is the vice president in charge of the diaspora and bilateral relations for the Transformers Party. He tells VOA's Peter Clotty that most Chadians are opposed to the military council and its plan to organize future elections.
Not only our party, but all the people of Chad are against this. This is not only us. Everybody is clearly expressing their opposition to this. We have a constitution, and we need to respect the constitution, even if the constitution is not the perfect one. There are terms in the constitution that allow for the president of the General Assembly to take over. Regardless of what the president thinks or decides, there are lawful ways to proceed, and it's not their job to come over and take over. This is a coup.
But what can opposition and civil society groups do? Because now there is a military council that says it was going to be there for at least 18 months to ensure a smooth transition to elections following the death of Idriss Deby, who was projected to have won the recent elections.
You see, this is a problem because, as I said, we have a constitution that says in case of inability of the current president to exist, to continue to be president, in this case, his death, the transitional phase can last between 45 to 90 days. It's written in the Article 83 and 84 of the Constitution. And yet, this group of military who are close to the regime disregard that, and they come up with their own term saying that they will be having a transition for 18 months that is possible to renew for another term of 18 months. This is no longer a transition. It's a permanent government that's being put in place.
Some people are saying that it appears the current military council has some form of support from some countries in the West. How are people reacting to this?
Again, this is a Chadian problem. It's not a foreign institution problem. This is the Chadian problem, and it's for the Chadian to find a solution to their own problem, regardless of who's supporting or not. And majority of the Chadians are against this military council. Regardless of what the international opinion is saying, if they really are interested in the peace, in peaceful transition in Chad, they better be on the side of the people, not on the side of the group of people who are manipulating the constitution or the international opinion to keep themselves in power. We're going from father to a son. This is not a democracy.
What choices or solutions do you have? What avenues are there for your party and like-minded parties as well as civil society groups to address what you clearly say is a major problem and undemocratic situation in Chad at the moment?
What we are suggesting is for the Chadian people to have a dialogue, inclusive dialogue, that bring all those people who are upset, who took firearms, those who are protesting, those who are in the diaspora, for all of us to come and sit and discuss of the future of this country and install a transitional team that is not military, that will lead the country to a peaceful and transparent election to allow us to move this country forward.
Dr. Undo Lembai Njesada Sade is the vice president in charge of the diaspora and bilateral relations for the Opposition Transformers Party of Chad. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty. A U.S. State Department spokesperson says the United States is concerned about recent developments in Chad. However, Ned Price said the U.S. will continue to call for and support a peaceful, democratic transition to a civilian government in Chad.
We offer the people of Chad our heartfelt condolences on the death of President Deby. We continue to stand with the people of Chad during this difficult time. We condemn recent violence and loss of life in Chad. And as I said yesterday, we support a peaceful and democratic transition of power to a civilian-led government. Obviously, developments in recent days and hours are a cause for concern, but we will continue to call for and support a peaceful, democratic transition to a civilian-led government. We have long encouraged a move toward democracy and representative government in Chad. We'll continue to do that. We will support and do everything we can to support a peaceful, democratic transition of power to a civilian-led government. Certainly, the violence in Chad that we've spoken to is gravely disturbing, but we're watching closely as the political situation evolves. The situation is fluid. We want to see a peaceful, democratic transition of power to a civilian-led government. We would be concerned by anything that would stand in the way of that.
What's the physical demonstration of your standing with the people of Chad during this time of transition?
So obviously the time of transition is now, we're just hours into it, and we're watching very closely. But let me just say that last year alone, we provided $130 million in humanitarian assistance and development aid to the people of Chad. I know that our support for and partnership with the people of Chad will continue to endure. We know that especially during this time of transition, our support will be especially important, and that's why we are committed to it.
As we've said, the opposition, the major opposition parties, have called this a coup. Are you undertaking a review?
It's a fluid situation. I wouldn't want to characterize it anyway just yet. What I would say to your question, though, is something I said before, is that we have long encouraged a move towards democracy and representative government in the context of Chad. That is something we'll continue to do.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 23rd. The European Union's strategy to addressing the ongoing crisis in the Sahel has some good points, but there are gaps that need to be addressed, according to a recent release by Oxfam. Michael Sladisha is the organization's humanitarian and conflict expert for West Africa.
And the text is not bad. It's really, there's a lot of good things in there. There's a lot of things about human rights, about fair and accountable governance. The issue is that you still have also on the other side the whole military focus, and it's difficult to know to what extent and how the different bits and pieces in the strategy are going to articulate. Now the question is, you have a strategy that is really broad and can make a lot possible. The question is, how is it going to be implemented? What is going to be the priority? And for example, if you look at the first priorities of the text, they clearly call for a leap in civil and political action, and which is echoing what was said in N'Djamena during the G5 Sahel, the last G5 Sahel summit. But the question is, they are still speaking about first stabilization in the short term and then secondly development. And it's not working because you can't expect military efforts to actually bring stability in the, by themselves.
How important is it to listen to and to include the voice of Sahelians in the response? And is the EU strategy doing that to the degree in which it should?
So they are talking about inclusivity. The issue is that in the design itself of the strategy, there were some consultation of civil society, but it was not to the extent that we can speak of real inclusive consultation and inclusive development of a strategy document. And we hope that in the implementation of the strategy, the EU will be more inclusive. And yes, it's crucial. I think it's a central part, because the ones that know how to actually bring a solution to the conflict are the populations themselves, are the people affected on the ground. And so you have different ways of doing that. The EU could work through their delegation with civil societies that are present and experts in different local areas affected by conflict. There's, of course, also a need to go beyond and to consult populations themselves, either through programs or by also supporting processes that will allow communities to actually have legitimate representatives.
What are some of the biggest challenges to achieving that kind of systematic change?
So first, of course, working in a context of conflict is not easy. You have issues of access. You have issues of tension within communities, between communities. So that's also why you need to consult people that actually know well what's happening on the ground and know the specificities at local level. So that would be one thing. And of course, consultation is also a difficult process, but it's one we need to think more about and think more of how we can be more inclusive in the EU policies and the strategies that is going to be implemented.
That was Michael Sladisha, Oxfam's humanitarian and conflict expert for West Africa. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. A search is underway for university students abducted late Tuesday this week by gunmen from Nigeria's north central state of Kaduna, killing at least one school official. The attack is the fifth high-profile abduction for Nigerian students since December, and it comes nearly 1 month after gunmen kidnapped 39 students in Kaduna. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
School authorities at Greenfield University in Nigeria's Kaduna State are conducting a headcount and investigating the attack, but say initial figures show at least 20 students are missing. A staff member was also found dead after the raid. Local police search team has launched a rescue operation for the missing students. The attack is the fifth in a series of mass kidnappings in the country's north since December, exacerbating an already bad security situation in the West African nation, says security expert Ebenezer Oyetakin.
It's worrisome and disturbing. The problem is that I think we do not have enough proactive intelligence gathering
It is not clear if all the missing students were kidnapped by local criminal gangs who often kidnap for ransom. But the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, says more than 700 students have been kidnapped from schools in northern Nigeria since December. Nigerian states like Kaduna, Niger, Katsina, Yobe, and Zamfara have been the hardest hit. Last month, 39 students were taken from another college in Kaduna, and only 10 of them so far have been released. In another attack this week in nearby Zamfara State, barely 24 hours after the school attack, local dailies reported 45 people were killed. Nigerian authorities repeatedly have pledged to secure the country's citizens, but the recurrent attacks have drawn criticisms by groups demanding accountability. Sheun Bakare is with Amnesty International.
We believe that one of the reasons why the crimes have continued is because of lack of accountability. Impunity always leads to further commission of crimes by perpetrators.
No one has been persecuted so far since the wave of kidnappings began last year. Amnesty International reports more than 600 schools have been shut down in at least six states in Nigeria's north, where education has been shaky. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
The World Health Organization says that millions of children in Africa are not receiving life-saving vaccinations against preventable killer diseases because most efforts are focused on ending the COVID-19 pandemic. The latest WHO figures find more than 4.4 million COVID-19 cases on the African continent, including 118,000 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Crucial immunization campaigns against diseases such as measles, polio, and yellow fever have been put on hold while countries tackle the COVID-19 pandemic. For example, the World Health Organization reports that 15 African countries last year delayed measles immunization campaigns to deal with the pandemic. WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says seven of these countries have since completed the campaigns, but eight have not, risking outbreaks of this deadly disease.
Preliminary data shows that an estimated 16.6 million children in Africa missed planned supplemental measles vaccine doses between January 2020 and April 2021. As we fight COVID-19, we can't leave anyone dangerously exposed to other preventable diseases.
Moeti says hopes are growing that vaccines will help bring the COVID-19 pandemic to an end. At the same time, she says many of the millions of African children who are not being reached by routine vaccinations are at risk of dying. She says this must not and need not happen. Sierra Leone's Minister of Health and Sanitation, Austin Demby, agrees. He says vaccines really do work, and regular vaccinations for children must be maintained. He says immunization coverage in his country has improved steadily in the past 5 years before the COVID-19 outbreak. As a consequence, he says Sierra Leone has gone for a number of years without major outbreaks of vaccine-preventable diseases like measles and yellow fever.
Despite the gains that have been made in immunization coverage over the years, the COVID-19 pandemic has led to adverse effect on vaccination coverage across the country. With all eyes focused on COVID-19 vaccines, other crucial vaccination commitments must not be forgotten.
WHO reports 41 African countries so far have received over 18 million doses through the COVAX vaccine sharing facility. This number, it says, includes seven countries that received their first deliveries last week due to shipment delays. Moeti says Africa's vaccine rollout also has been delayed because of production limitations in India, which is facing a severe wave of COVID-19. However, she says WHO has been informed that India will resume vaccine supplies to Africa in early May. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with Nigerian international and Leicester City striker Kelechi Iheanacho, who achieved a new personal goal-scoring record in a single Premier League season after hitting the target in the first half of Leicester City's 3-0 victory over West Bromwich Albion at the King Power Stadium on Thursday evening. Kelechi Iheanacho's latest strike is his 9th Premier League goal this season.
Yeah, he just can't stop scoring at the moment, but I'm very happy for him, very proud, and I just want him to keep doing the thing and keep scoring, help the team, so it's good for us all. The team was brilliant, and I'm happy he got the point, so it's good for us.
One more than his previous best of 8 that he managed for Manchester City in the 2015-2016 campaign. The 24-year-old has now found the back of the net 16 times in all competitions for the Foxes, the highest he has ever scored in a single campaign. Kelechi Iheanacho's teammate and fellow Nigerian is Wilfred Ndidi. He speaks on Kelechi's performance on Thursday. And to South Africa, where Bafana Bafana has been without a coach since the sacking of coach Nseki Molefe, and South Africa's hopes of seeing Harvey Renard on the Bafana Bafana bench in the near future appears to be dented after the coach denied applying for the job. In an interview with South Africa Metro FM, Harvey Renard vehemently denied ever applying for the vacant Bafana Bafana post, labeling the reports as disrespectful to the Saudi community. Renard said he was very happy in Saudi Arabia, while also confirming that he has a running contract with their football association. Ahead of the 2020 Olympic Games, Egypt's under-23 coach Shoaki Gharib said on Thursday that the Egyptian Football Association have submitted a second request to Liverpool to include forward Mohamed Salah in the squad participating in the Tokyo Olympics next summer. Gharib told the local radio station that they had sent an official request to Liverpool following the Faroes' game against Comoros in the 2021 African Cup of Nations qualifiers, which took place on the 29th of March, but the Premier League club requested for more details. Egypt were drawn in a difficult group alongside heavyweight Spain, Argentina, and Australia. In women's football, Kenya has been nominated to host the inaugural 2021 CECAFA Women's Champions League in July. Football Kenya Federation CEO Barry Otieno said on Thursday that the tournament will be held in Nairobi from July 17th to August 1. Kenya will host 10 countries including Uganda, Tanzania, Ethiopia, Sudan, South Sudan, Zanzibar, Djibouti, Eritrea, Rwanda, and Burundi. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, April 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the distribution of COVID-19 vaccines has started as new variants of the coronavirus are spreading across Africa. Join me, Linor Moudou, and a panel of experts to answer your questions about COVID-19, the vaccines, and assess Africa's response 1 year after the pandemic on a special edition of Straight Talk Africa.
Kim Lewis, join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including U.S. President Joe Biden invites world leaders to a virtual summit on climate change as Earth Day is celebrated internationally. Biden hopes to reach deals with some of the world's largest greenhouse gas emitters. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
People concerned about the health and well-being of our planet mark Earth Day every April 22nd. Hi, this is Rick Pantaleo. Please listen to the science edition of Press Conference USA when I'm joined by a trio of experts for discussions on important environmental concerns like climate change and restoring Earth's ecosystems. Listen Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.